Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Okay, we're back. It's Inside Boxing Live. We're powered by PPV.com. It's Dan Canobio. It's Chris Algieri. December 6th, Pitbull Cruz stepping into the ring against Lamont Roach. And it's going to be live on PPV.com. So join us in the live interactive chat. We'll be there, boots on the ground, giving you all the great content like we always do. And we always do that with the help of PPV.com. So if you're going to order the fight, order it with PPV.com. You know, do us a solid. Since we're doing you a solid every week, twice a week sometimes. This time we're doing twice a week with Mr. Chris Algieri. So PPV.com is the place to go for PPC pay-per-views, and the next one is December 6th. How are you, Chris Algieri?
I am great. And that fight, that's in Texas, right? We're in San Antonio?
San Antonio, baby.
Love that place. I really like San Antonio. You and I have ever been to San Antonio together? No.
Never been.
Oh no! Okay, so I got to show you around. I've frequented San Antonio quite a bit between matchroom years with Bam Rodriguez and Pro Box. We've been going out there quite a bit with Robert Garcia's guys down there. So we and Ramon Cardenas, he's another guy from that area. Very, very cool town. I'll show you around. The water, the Riverwalk, excellent food, great Tex-Mex. Very very cool, fun town, and the Alamo. Can't forget the Alamo.
Got to remember it.
It's about as big as my apartment. So, or the hotel room I'm in right now, not apartment. It's not very big.
Remember the Alamo. You remember that joke?
No.
Remember the Alamo. Isn't that like the saying?
I know it's a saying. It's not a joke. It's a saying.
It's kind of a joke.
You're a joke.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate that. Speaking of San Antonio and NBA basketball, I'm charged up because I was at the Knicks game last night, season
opener. And they actually won.
The Knicks are good. The Knicks have a legitimate, like, 12-man rotation. Welcome to Inside Basketball Live. They took it to the Cavs, who are looked to be the number one seed. Like, the Cavs are the Knicks' biggest competition in the East. But I bring this up because, speaking of San Antonio, Sean Sweeney is the associate head coach of the San Antonio Spurs. Massive boxing fan. Whoa. Texted me one day out of the blue. Said, hey, I got your number from, I don't know, so-and-so. I'm a big fan of your show and big fan of you and Chris. Let's talk some boxing. I said, all right, let's talk some basketball. So, yeah, Sean Sweeney, if you're listening, what's up? Wembanyama is a freak, and you never know who's listening. You never know who watches this beautiful sport that we love and we call boxing.
That is awesome, and we're headed there. That's great. And guys who are frequent listeners of the pod, bookmark this episode for when Dan and I are crying about the Knicks not doing what they potentially could do early in the season, because when you're a New York sports fan, you're just used to being completely crushed by the end of the season. So
crazy. It never was like this. The Knicks, New York's down bad. We have like the Liberty are winning and the soccer team is doing good, but like the four major sports. But this is the year. It hasn't been this much anticipation around Knicks season since 94. Ewing, Starks, Anthony Mason. Jordan was out gambling.
That was the height of gambling. My basketball watching. But definitely always been a Knicks fan.
To put a button on this basketball talk, did you see this gambling scandal that just broke?
No. With what?
Yeah. Chauncey Billups, former Detroit Piston, now head coach of – what team is he head coach of? I don't know. Portland Trailblazers just got arrested by the FBI. He was part of – these underground poker rings that the mafia was throwing in the Hamptons, New York City, Vegas. And they would bring in Chauncey Billups as a decoy to legitimize their enterprise. But what they were doing was robbing these people blind during these executive card games with all sorts of infrared cameras, lighting schemes, like wild shit. Like one guy lost $2 million and it was the mafia and Chauncey Billups running this underground poker scheme, but it gets better. There's a separate part of this whole scheme where there were NBA players point shaving, their NBA players manipulating their over-unders. One guy, Terry Rozier on the Heat, he told all of his buddies, yo, bet the under on all my props tonight, like under points, under rebounds, because I'm going to take myself out of the game. Whoa. I'm going to play like shit, and then I'm going to take myself out of the game.
This is diabolical. When is the Netflix documentary coming out on this one? Because this is prime.
I feel like this happens in boxing all the time. Our boxing listeners are like, oh, scandals.
Yeah, duh. Yeah, whatever.
Corruption. This is happens in boxing every day of the week.
It's baked into the cake here.
Yeah. Later on in this episode, we will talk about some scandals and some boxing movies in our second segment. But we start off our show in the heavyweight division. Finally, we have a heavyweight fight. I think this is the last biggest heavyweight fight of the year. It has been a while since the big guys have stepped into the ring in terms of high-profile fights. It's Joseph Parker and it's Fabio Wardley. And I believe this is like a throwback type of fight, Chris. This is a gentleman's fight. Not a lot of trash talk. Just two guys stepping in the ring that don't have to fight each other. Parker is the WBO mandatory. Fabio Wardley is a WBA mandatory. They have cushy spots. They could both potentially fight Alexander Usyk, or they could potentially fight for a world title if Usyk gives up a belt. They decided they're going to run towards each other. Props to them. And this is a really good heavyweight fight.
Well, that's kind of like the word on the street. It's like, well, neither one of these guys need to take that fight. But I disagree. I think they both need this fight, and for different reasons, obviously. I think Wardley, to legitimize his position as being the number one contender and a mandatory for that said belt, he needs a big win. He needs a name. He doesn't have anyone on his record that you look at and you're like, oh, okay, this guy deserves to have a shot at the king of the mountain. With a win over Parker, dude, not only are you getting the number one spot because of the two belts, but like, you kind of deserve it now because Joseph Parker is the guy. You got to get past Joseph Parker if you're going to get to Usyk, in my opinion. And then for Parker, who just doesn't get the love from the fans and from the promoters and the people who are going to put this fight together, just he needs to keep winning. And just keep knocking at the door and be like, hey, guys, I'm still here. Hey, guys, I'm still here. I'm beating all the guys you put in front of me. You got to give me my shot. So I think both these guys actually do need this fight. Maybe not so much in terms of rankings, but in terms of like, instead of knocking on the door, kicking it in, a win for either one of these guys puts them in that position.
I agree. And I think Parker's smart because he's like, oh, listen, I'm not going to play these games anymore. I deserve Usyk big time. I think all boxing can agree. Like, how rare is it for boxing fans to ever agree on something as a consensus? I think they believe in like earlier pay-per-view starts or earlier main events, and Joseph Parker deserves a shot at Usyk. But he's not getting that shot. So he must think like, all right, like I'm getting up there in age, what is he, like mid-30s? You know, I can't win around here. I got my money-making capabilities and the most I can make is now. So I'll fight this guy in Wardley who can put asses in seats. Like they're looking at 17,000-18,000 for this O2 arena. Wardley just put a bunch of asses in seats in his last fight against Justice Hooney. So it's like, all right, I'm not going to make as much as I would make against Usyk, but I'll make a good amount and I'll be favored over Wardley. He's only a slight favorite too, which shows you how good this fight is. So I do get it from the standpoint of a business, because this is a business, and like you can attest to this, it that goes into so much of the thinking, right?
Yeah, 100%. And it's the reason why Joseph Parker keeps getting looked over is because it is the business, it's the profile. That's why the money is not there for that fight. And then Wardley, who is, like you said, wildly popular, but really hasn't fought anyone of note, especially globally. He's fought a lot of local guys, kind of, you know, domestic level, I think, heavyweights. Not knocking any of those guys. They don't have the profile. You know, he's beaten guys who are 12-0, but guys, you know, that have under 15 fights. So I think it makes a lot of sense for everybody. It's Wardley is wildly popular right now. He's got great momentum and the dude can punch, man. He can really punch. And this makes this a very interesting and dangerous fight. I think stylistically, it's a good matchup as well. This fight, I wasn't like super keen on it earlier in the week. And then I just started looking into it more and more. And I'm like, God, this is a sneaky, really good fight. And the closer we get to it, the more excited I'm getting.
Yeah, because there's not a lot of fights on the schedule. Like
that too. But even aside from that, I think this is a really good fight.
It's also like it almost is like a semi-final for Usyk, which I think boxing, like every other sport has this, where, you know, you play in the playoffs and you know who you're getting as a bracket. Like there isn't really a bracket set in stone, but if Wardley wins as the underdog and say he knocks out Parker, Wardley Usyk, I think will happen for a number, go back to the business stuff. I don't know if fans like this or not, but it's a big part of the sport. they won't have to pay Wardley as much as they would pay Parker. So there's a little more in the pot to make it a little more reasonable for Usyk. So if Wardley wins, I mean, he'll probably get that shot at Usyk. If Parker wins, I still don't know if he gets that shot at Usyk, because Usyk is flirting with these big names. It's just true, bro. He's flirting with the Fury fight for a third time. He's looking at MMA. He's like entertaining Jake Paul. He's not entertaining Atuma, but he kind of is, because even Frank Warren said that that we were just flattered by the fact that Usyk would even name Moses right now, 13 fights.
But is he, or is he just, it's just gamesmanship, because he's brilliant. It's not just how brilliant he is in the ring. He's brilliant with his negotiating, the way he angles himself, and the way he brings guys up, and
talking about Usyk,
he goes in the ring with Jake Paul after a fight. Like, it's like he plays these games, but they're not games, because he's so calculated and he knows it can help him down the line. I think you're right. I think if Wardley wins, it really shakes things up, and 100% the Usyk Wardley fight happens because of the popularity of Wardley. I think if Parker wins, I wouldn't be super surprised if Usyk just goes, you know what? Gentleman's agreement. I'm fighting this guy because he deserves it. Because that's how Usyk operates. If he's the number one contender, he's the guy that deserves the shot and consistently gets up to the plate and just doesn't get chosen, I imagine that Usyk could pull the strings of being the king and be like, all right, let's fight this guy. Because, I mean, we live in a sport. No, there's no one left. And I think it's a worthy challenge to Usyk, because it is a difficult fight. So it's a difficult fight. And to me, more and more, Usyk strikes me as a consummate competitor, and he wants the best challenges possible. I think Joseph Parker is a real challenge. I would not be surprised if Usyk goes, you know what? I don't care what anybody says. That's the guy.
And they could do it in like Poland, right? Wasn't the first Dubois fight was in Poland, because they obviously can't do it in Ukraine. You're not going to do it in the UK, because Usyk has fought in the UK, but it's usually against a UK fighter. Last one was against Dubois, Joshua. Maybe Saudi, if he really won't matter at all when it comes to that, but it doesn't. I feel like Turkey's not really messing with Usyk anymore. Could be wrong. I think they had a little bit of a falling out.
I don't know.
They came out and announced that they were interested.
Do it here.
That'd be awesome.
Do it here in the States. No, but why not? I mean, I can dream, can't I? Do it here. I would love to go to a big heavyweight fight here.
No. You know why they won't do it in the States? Because I just saw that Justice Hooney versus Fabio Wardley, there was 18,000 people there.
Yeah, yeah.
Those fans are insane. Those fans are amazing.
Like, UK cool, fans, O2. Whatever.
Yeah, I guess. Parker versus, I know we're getting really far ahead of here. Parker versus Usyk at the O2?
Isn't Usyk popular enough over there at this point?
He should be.
Yeah. And you stack the card with Brits?
Yeah.
Now,
let's see.
Now we're throwing darts in the dark, but whatever.
Yeah.
that's what we do here. It's an opinion show, guys.
I'll clip that out, and I'll make sure everyone yells at us for jumping ahead. Cool. Of course, Stevenson will quote tweet it.
Just churn everybody up, Dan. Get them into a good lather out there, all pissed at you and sending you hate mail.
We're not the only show. We're not really a show that does that, because there is a show out there right now with a former ESPN employee that is just throwing hot takes out there to try to anger everyone. And Usyk is one of them. Usyk's resume is thin at heavyweight, according to former ESPN employee.
Well, that's the...
I won't take the bait.
Going for engagement. I get it. We're not here for that, they call it.
No, engagement we don't have
farming.
To do that. Engagement no, farming. We do aura farming here, but not engagement farming. Let's talk about Joseph Parker. Wins over Ruiz, Takam, Bacoli, Wilder, Chisora, Zhang. He has losses to Joshua, White, and Joyce. He's a former world champion. I mean, that is literally everyone of this past generation outside of Tyson Fury. And he was left for dead after the Joyce fight. Yes. I wrote him off after that. I thought it was such a brutal beating that I was like, all right, he'll continue to fight, but I don't know if he could make it back to the mountaintop. But the wins over Bacoli, asterisk, wins
don't forget,
over...
Don't forget Chisora. He had the Chisora fights too. I don't think you mentioned him.
Was that after Chisora was after?
That was that was before Joe Joyce, but I just meant in general in terms of his overall resume.
You know what's a sneaky good win for Joe for Mr. Parker? Is the win over Andy Ruiz.
Yeah.
It came in 2016. It came before Ruiz beat Joshua, but Ruiz then was known fast, very quick hands, fast. You know, Ruiz wasn't just like come out of nowhere guy that beat Joshua. He was regarded as a great amateur and really fast hands, and he Parker beat him 2016. Got a good resume, Parker, is what I'm trying to say.
Fantastic resume. Fantastic. And former world champion. I think a lot of fight fans forget that he actually is a world champion. So that, because it was so long ago and I don't know, it just gets lost to the wayside. It's like, oh, he needs a shot. And, you know, this guy's been here for, well, no, he's already been a champion.
The Ruiz fight was for the WBO vacant title in 2016. Well, he won the title at heavyweight when heavyweight wasn't heavyweight. It was still thawing out from Klitschko. Wilder had just won one of the other belts. We're talking 2016. This is like 9 years ago. You know, Joshua hadn't fought Klitschko yet.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's probably why he's, it's just that it happened so long ago and the heavyweight division wasn't popping like it is now or has been over the last 5 years. So that's why, but it just goes in line with who Parker is. Former world champ, but no one even kind of thinks of him as a world champion.
Yeah, I mean, he defended his belt twice. So, you know, he took Andy Ruiz's O to win the WBO title, and then he took Huey Fury's O to defend it one of the times, and then he lost the decision to Anthony Joshua, who was at the height of his powers at that point. So, very, very good record. Yeah, that Joe Joyce one really sticks out weird. That was a weird loss.
Well, that was when Joe Joyce, like, figured it out and was just looked like the second coming of George Foreman. That was one of the more brutal beatdowns I remember watching, and
that's a potential career ender. And he has done the exact opposite, completely changed his career around since then.
That was in 2022, and I just thought, you know what, Parker's just too small now, and this because Joyce is huge, Fury was reigning still, Joshua, big guy, and I just thought Parker was undersized. Another reason why people overlook him because he doesn't do like one thing spectacular. He does a lot of things.
No, he's solid. Super solid.
Solid. He's a solid guy. Doesn't have the biggest personality, but he kind of does. If you really follow him, and you can see that he does a lot of good content. But he's not like braggadocious. He's not in your face. He just is a consummate pro.
He's a gentleman.
This is why, probably sadly, is that like without the help of Turkey, without the help of, you know, a Saudi government, we're not – a Usyk fight is like hard to make, which is crazy, but –
Well, apparently it's harder to make because of them because they don't like the fight. They don't like, you know, so it's kind of hurting them also. But you know where it's not hurting them? His bank account. And I've been rethinking about Joseph Parker. I keep being like, this poor guy. He keeps getting left outside looking in and they keep throwing these tough fights in front of him. He's had his last three fights in Riyadh?
Yeah.
Four fights in Riyadh. The bags that he's bringing home from these fights... People ask me like, oh man, it's a really dangerous fighting Wardley. You think he should have done that? I'm like, he's already been a world champion. He's a world champion forever, guys. The legacy is there. He's already won a world title. If he never wins a world title again, doesn't matter. He's a world champion for life. And
from
he's
New
making
Zealand, too.
Tons of money in these fights. A heavyweight fighting on Riyadh, four fights in a row, fighting tough name guys, or he's the underdog. I don't know. I got Joseph Parker to me is winning all around. Wow. This guy's got, he's beaten, you know, guys he's not supposed to.
Keep going.
Yeah. He's beating guys he's not supposed to. He's an underdog and he's getting paid. So I don't know. I tip my hat. This guy's moving very, very smart.
Well, Chris, don't forget about the step aside money too.
Oh, there you go. More money.
Step aside. He's getting paid to do nothing. He literally stepped aside numerous times.
God bless him.
For Usyk to become undisputed, for Usyk to not fight him. Yeah, great career. Fighters would dream of a career like this, but now I'm going to play a little devil's advocate, and I'm going to poke holes a little bit at Joseph Parker. We're talking about, oh, my God, this guy's dangerous, right? This guy has bounced back so nicely from the Joe Joyce fight, 6 straight wins. The Jack Massey, that was a bounce-back win, and he did it. The other guy, I can't even pronounce his name, no offense, Opelu, another first-round knockout. Simon Keen, third-round knockout. No offense to Keen, didn't belong in the ring with Joseph Parker. Then he started to get this real resurgence when he picked up these next 3 wins. Wilder, Zhang, Bacoli. I don't want to be that guy, but I'm about to be. Wilder was finished at that point. I mean, that was a good win but in name, but it wasn't the Deontay Wilder of old. Zhang has shown to be a contender style. Still big, still huge. And Bacoli came in on 10 minutes notice, 500 pounds. He was eating in the ring So what I'm trying to say is...
I'm going to push back. I'm going to push back on your pushback. Because, listen, we didn't know Deontay Wilder was shot. You find out Deontay Wilder's a shot because Joseph Parker showed up. If he didn't and he got starched,
there were whispers.
But whatever. He's still supposed to beat. Deontay Wilder's still supposed to beat a Joseph Parker. Didn't even come close. Got dominated.
I think we heard that Wilder was messing with psychedelics, but we didn't know the extent.
Yeah, we didn't know that was going to be the end-all, be-all, but whatever. So he's out. Zhile Zhang, regardless, he's still a really tough, big puncher you got to deal with. He got dropped twice in that fight. And, you know, Zhile Zhang was on a very good streak himself. Momentum-wise, he was in a good place. He beats him. Again, Martin Bacoli. Hey, you do what you're supposed to do with a guy who came off the couch on 16 hours notice. And, you know, because if he struggled with the guy or whatever, there's more of an argument. But listen, he did what he did with what he had in front of him, and now he's here where he's at. So, I mean, I don't know. I am a little bit of a Joseph Parker stan. I love the guy.
100%.
I love the guy, so I'm always going to bat for him. But
just questioning a little bit, because what is his best win? His best win is, what is his best win?
His best win is the Andy Ruiz, like you said, you know, a million years ago. Next, I would think, would be Deontay Wilder in terms of profile and you know, at the time, big underdog, you know. So, again, that, even Vegas didn't know how shot Wilder was. So, that does matter.
Zhang was 26-1 when they fought.
Yeah. Yeah, and on a I think, let me look real quick.
I have his box book up right here.
How many fight win streak?
Several.
Yeah, but also was coming up. He had a two-fight win streak. So he blasted Joe Joyce out in two fights back-to-back.
Yeah.
The guy who beat Parker. Yeah. So that's a big win.
And when Zhang beat Joyce, people were excited. And
yeah.
Zhang's stock was extremely high. And then Parker
Zhang might be his best win. Well, I mean, Andy's his best win. It's a world title fight against an undefeated guy who's very, very talented, who later showed up to be really good. But number two would be the Zhang fight.
I agree. Solid fighter. Lands 46% of his power shots, which is top 10 in all of boxing.
Accurate.
Doesn't throw a lot because he's a heavyweight, but he lands a lot. I mean, that's usually the case with a lot of guys in the top 10. The Ring Magazine just put out a really cool graphic with all the top 10 power landed guys. There's a lot of names that you have heard of, and Joseph Parker is one of those names. Javonta Davis is in there. Shakur Stevenson, Bam Rodriguez is number one in terms of power landed. Where is it?
Bam
pretty
is?
Cool. Bam, yeah, I'm going to pull it up. I used to post these because I have like all the stats, but they did a really cool graphic. Bam, 48.9, number one. Shakur, 47.8. Javonta, 47.6. Hergovic, 46.9. Badu,
really?
Jack, Lara, Spence, probably take Spence out of that, Canelo, Benavidez, and then at number 10 is Joseph Parker at 45% power. So this is pretty much what he is, 41% body shots. Body shots are going to be huge in this fight because Wardley throws a lot of body shots as well. So let's talk about Fabio Wardley. And you talk about how this guy just kind of burst onto the scene. Never had an amateur career. Had four white collar, like novice type of fights, and then quit his job. I believe he was working in like the social worker sector in the UK. Turned pro and has knocked out 18 of his 20 opponents as a pro. Just has ridiculous athleticism. He's 19-0 with 18 KOs. Ridiculous athleticism. Great power. Seems like he has a groundswell support of his hometown fans. And now he is arguably one win away from becoming or getting a heavyweight title shot within 20 fights. It's kind of crazy.
What a story.
30 years old.
Can I add to that, too? I mean, 30 is still pretty young for heavyweight.
Spring chicken. Not a lot of miles on the odometer.
Yeah, the guy's learning on the job, obviously. But went the distance his pro debut, by the way. That was the only guy to go to distance, four rounder, and he dropped the guy. And then he went the distance when he fought, when he had the draw with Clark, fights him in a rematch and dents his head.
Breaks his face.
In the first round. So obviously learning on the job, obviously getting better as he goes. Was getting thoroughly out hustled and outboxed by Hooney. Scores that come from behind, blistering knockout. Dude can punch. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, I said earlier in the week, I wasn't super excited for this fight, but then I literally looked into it. And I'm just watching Wardley and just naturally super strong, athletic and powerful, big heavyweight, 6'5", 245, athletic, believes in his power, can come from behind to knock you out. As long as this fight's going on, he's dangerous. And those are always fun fighters. So yeah, this guy is a bit of a problem. Bit of a problem. And taking this fight, which is a huge step up, obviously, Joseph Parker has so much more experience in every way possible. Even a loss here, you're like, I don't know, this guy's still going to be around for a while, I would believe, depending on, you know, obviously it always depends on the way he takes the loss, if he is to lose. But pretty calculated decision to take this fight. I think he's a 3-1 dog in the fight, which is closer than I would expect. But when you got power the way that he does and athleticism, yeah, he's always in it.
Yeah, he's plus 300 according to DraftKings. Minus 400 is Parker. I was a little shocked. I expect that to be a little wider. But, you know, maybe the odds makers are thinking about Parker like I was just thinking about it, like what's his best win, blah, blah, blah. Like over-under is 9.5 rounds. Parker by stoppage is minus 110. Parker by decision, plus 210. Wardley by stoppage, plus 450.
Whoa.
Wardley by decision, plus 1,100. They do not believe that Wardley's getting a decision. They believe that the only way Wardley can win. The only way Wardley can win is with a stoppage. But, yeah, to the some of Wardley's last couple fights, like he got into my radar with that denting knockout of Frazier Clark in their rematch. I did watch their first fight. It was a split draw. And then the knockout in the rematch, which was eye-opening, went viral. He had wins over Adelaide before that, which is a nice win. That was a step-up fight. That was also in Saudi. And even Michael Coffey was on the scene for a while as a heavyweight kind of journeyman. So that was he knocked him out, of course. And then the Adelaide Clark-Hooney run that he's on is pretty impressive. And that Hooney fight was straight out of a movie. I mean, it's his first real big step-up. Hooney is regarded as a really good amateur and had way more experience and just an all-around, quote-unquote, better boxer. He's fighting in his hometown football stadium. There's 18,000 people there, and he's kind of laying an egg. I rewatched the fight yesterday, and he's landing some shots. Like, he doesn't look completely overmatched, but he's losing the fight. He was down 8-2, 7-2 on what's his name, scorecard? The little guy. What kind of looks like you. Everyone always say look like you.
Framp. Judge? Oh, Framp. You're like, literally, I thought you were talking about a judge. I'm like, little guy.
Carl
judge
Frampton was scoring the fight for whoever was broadcasting the fight.
That description was so bad.
Little guy, kind of looks like you.
Little guy, judge, what? Kind of looks like you.
British guy. Well, yeah. Irish. He's Irish, right?
Irish.
He's got the crazy accent, but. You know,
it's funny because I'm not Irish at all. People are like, you guys are like twins. Yeah, at certain angles, but like I'm not Irish at all.
Mouthpiece in, like in the ring, like you just
he's got to be together. In shape too, though, because I've met him when we were not in shape. We took photos together, and he looked nothing alike.
Why? Because he's just so small.
He gets heavy. Like his face gets round when he's not.
He's a good pundit. I like him a lot.
He's great. He's great.
Great on the mic. He's a good man. Unofficial judge. Yeah, he had Hooney up big. And then out of nowhere, Wardley lands the one-hitter quitter. And now he's on the scene. Now he's burst onto the scene. Now he's getting Joseph Parker. Now he's getting, you know, they're looking at him, not in the same breath as Atama, but like, all right, this is like an up-and-coming heavyweight. All the other heavyweights are getting older. This guy's exciting. He's got a 95% knockout rate. All right, let's go. Let's throw you in there with Joseph Parker. So this is going to be good. I'm really excited for this fight. It's on pay-per-view, so you can make of that what you will. It's a DAZN pay-per-view. I don't know how many fans here in the U.S. are going to be watching, but I know that everyone's going to have their eyes on the winner because you would think that Usyk would get a shot over this. But this Wardley guy, man, this is spectacular stuff and stuff that only can happen in boxing, especially heavyweight boxing, too, to have such a meteoric rise. And all of a sudden, now you're one step away from a heavyweight title shot.
and a very confident guy. You see the way he carries himself, to see the way that he does his interviews. I don't know. I like the cut of his jib, so to speak. You know, the way
his
that
hem
he
sheet,
operates.
I think they call it out there.
Over there. Okay. We got to use the British terms. But
they're cut from the same hem sheet. Remember, Anthony Joshua said that to me once, and I was like, what the frick?
What the hell does that mean?
He's like, you know, we're cut from the same hem sheet. And I was like, that is sounds so cool, but what does it even mean?
That does sound cool. That means nothing to us over here. But we said, I think I said on the last episode that, you know, this fight, there's so much on the line. If Wardley is to get the upset win, this shakes things up a lot. Because then you have this massive fight now with Wardley and Usyk on the horizon. And I think it's a no-brainer. That would be the very next fight, right?
Yes, and that's a number of reasons.
That's a big deal. So you got to think, like, if they're boxing gods up there who are playing with the strings, proverbially, they're going to want Wardley to win this fight.
Really?
I think so. Makes
the boxing gods aren't looking down on Joseph Parker getting overlooked left and right.
Depends which if these are benevolent gods or evil gods.
Yeah, do they care about money?
Do they care about ethics and what is right and what is the good, the overall good?
Yeah. Winner should get Usyk no matter what.
Yeah.
Will that happen? Remains to be seen. So who are you going with in this fight? I just gave you the odds. 3-1 underdog is Fabio Wardley. Joseph Parker, a little bit older, wiser, got those losses on there. That Joe Joyce fight wasn't that long ago. -400. I'm leaning Parker. I don't know if I want to go the safe route. Parker by decision, +210.
You're such a bum. You should have went for it. Should have went for it.
Going for it is Wardley by KO?
Yeah.
Well, has Parker ever been stopped?
Joe Joyce.
Yeah, but besides that, that's it.
No. Nope. Been down twice against Zhang.
Yes. Well, that's the thing with Wardley is he can crack. He can't really. Yes. He's kind of like a Wilder type. He's not as wild as Wilder. He's got a little more form.
He can fall behind, though.
Yes.
He can fall behind. But he believes in his power.
Could you see Parker outboxing him early rounds, first five or six? Parker's throwing that jab, landing those economical power shots. It's 5-1 after six.
I could see Parker outboxing him. I could see Parker hurting him. Parker's solid. He's literally pretty damn good at everything. He's not great at anything, but that experience goes a long way.
Well, that's why I like Parker by decision, because he's solid and he's not like.
Yeah, but I just expected you to go for it. That's all, Dan. You're letting me down on here.
Parker by stoppage, -110. That's no good value there.
Wow, really? I mean, I guess I could see Parker stopping him too, because Wardley has not been in with world class guys. Truly. I'm gonna preface this. Do not bet on my take. Because I mentioned earlier that I'm a Joe Parker stan. Love the guy. I think he's so entertaining and fun.
You're
a good
biased.
Guy. I'm very biased. So don't bet on my account. But I'm going with experience. And I tend to go with experience when these kind of fights come up. I think it is a pretty 50-50 fight because Wardley is super, super dangerous and can really punch. But yeah, I'm going with experience. I think Parker just has too much class, too much gas, too much, I mean,
ass?
Experience. I don't know anything about that.
Too much class, too much gas, too much ass.
That's got to be a saying somewhere.
Get that on a t-shirt.
You get that on a t-shirt and give it to one of the girls that works in your building. I'm going with the experience. I'm going with the guy who's been to the world-class level. I'm going to the guy who's worn the crown, and that's Joseph Parker.
But how, though?
By decision.
That's what I just said.
Pretty wide. I know, but I wanted you to take something different, and I figured you would. That's why I was.
Right,
I was.
Wardley,
I was saying.
Wardley
I was saying.
Stoppage, then.
I was saying this either way, but
I mean, Wardley stoppage at +450 is worth the sprinkle.
Yeah, worth the sprinkle.
450. That's a very juicy number. Wardley is a knockout guy.
What do you throw a C note on that? What do you think? Yeah. You throw a C note on that.
Listen, I'm not one to tell you how much to bet. I know people like to shame me because I always post. Here's one thing, too. I post my bets beforehand, not after, only when I win. And I anything I post, I bet, too. So sometimes I'll put 25, sometimes I'll put 50 because I'm not trying to go crazy with the betting. And there's people trying to look like pocket shame me on Twitter. Like, oh, wow, that's it, man?
Like, don't believe in your bet. Don't believe in your bet, huh, Dan?
Yeah. Like, I've been betting UFC lately, and I'm two for my last two because I bet Pereira to win, and then I beat the other Brazilian guy that just
UFC is not a good safe bet. It's hard. That's really not. I don't know anybody.
I'm putting even less money on the UFC ones because I'm not as confident. But
what are you betting? Like $1.50? What are you betting? Like $2.50?
$25. The dollar ones are. I don't understand those. I think that's way too low. Like. Listen, I'm not shaming anyone, but yeah, when I see like a dollar bet to win like $6 back, what are we doing here?
If you're doing that, you're a degenerate. Like you're doing it for the love of the game at that point, and you just have a problem.
Yeah, dollar bets. The other guy, the other Brazilian from the UFC, Oliveira, Charles.
Yeah, Charles.
I picked him by submission. Yeah, he just won recently in Brazil. It was an amazing scene. I was watching
it for him.
He had a full arena in Brazil chanting his name.
Yeah, he's a badass.
Kissing his wife, kisses his little daughter, his whole family before the fight, steps into the cage, submits this young up-and-coming contender. And I think he has the most submissions in UFC history.
He might have the most wins, too. He's been beast. His whole career has been in the UFC. He's a monster.
He was really good. And, so I've been on a roll with the UFC betting. And I've not been so hot with the boxing. But I'll go Wardley by stoppage, plus 450. That would be something. If that happens, you're right, Chris. If Wardley knocks out Joseph Parker, like, wow. Yeah, yeah. His hometown, that place is going to be nuts.
Yeah, that's a big shakeup. Really big shakeup.
And he's from Ipswich, Suffolk, United Kingdom.
Suffolk.
I believe that they have a English Premier League team in that hometown as well, and they just got relegated. Which is pretty cool. Set up in the English Premier League. If you suck so bad, they take you out of the league. And they're very popular, those English Premier Leagues. So that's the big fight this weekend. It's a heavyweight fight. It's worth your attention. Tune in. It's on DAZN pay-per-view. Chris, now we're going to segue into something fun. You are, if you haven't known, Chris is on a movie set, The Fight for 84, which is a new movie coming out via Netflix starring Jamie Foxx. Chronicling the 1984 U.S. Olympic team, one of the most notorious teams in the history of U.S. men's boxing and potentially boxing as well. Chris, you're a fight coordinator, stunt coordinator, teaching these guys how to box, train them, get them into the championship mindset. Coolest job ever, number one. How's it been going? We haven't talked about it in a while on the show.
I would argue that this podcast is the coolest job ever, but you know, this is
your job that you're doing now. I've been telling everyone, like, it's like my job. Like, oh, you hear what Chris is doing? He's a coordinator. I'm very proud. I'm very happy because it's the coolest job ever as someone in your position.
Pretty cool job. Pretty cool job. It's been fun, but I will say this: being a world champion was the coolest job ever. But that's a whole nother thing.
Number two for you.
Number two. So it's been going great. We started principal photography. Like, shoot, we're on like. Week four
this guy's
now.
Big words. Principal photography?
Yeah.
Who are you? What have you become? What does that even mean?
I mean, I've got a credit now, dude. I got a IMDb. I mean, I've already had one, but this is
will you be in the movie?
Can't say yet. Wow. Can't say yet. All the actors have been like, dude, you got to make a cameo. How are you not in the movie? We got to get you in the name. I'm really busy. Being a fight coordinator is a really, really busy job. So it would be difficult to even get into the movie if that was even an option. But it's going great. Fight scenes have been coming out really nice, really good, really exciting, and everyone's happy. So that's good. But yeah, it's been fun. It's a new cap, a new hat to wear, a new feather in the cap. We'll see if this something turns into something that happens more in the future. Who knows?
So what are some of the, like, how are the fighters looking? Like, how do you train? Someone sent us a voicemail too late. Mm-hmm. And it was a really cool question. Maybe I could actually play it, but that would take a little bit of work on my end. I'll just dictate it. They said, how do you train an actor to become a Evander Holyfield or Mark Breland or Pernell Whitaker? What does that process look like? Because that's pretty much what you've been doing.
Fantastic question. That's why this job in particular was so difficult, because you want to pay homage to these people. They're not characters. We didn't create Mark Breland. Mark Breland is a guy. And 1984 wasn't that long ago. So people are going to be able to watch this movie that know Mark. Mark is going to watch this movie. And he's going to be like, that guy doesn't look like me. That guy doesn't fight like me. That's an issue. So in terms of which
actors... That's on you then.
Correct. Casting did a great job in terms of picking guys that looked the part physically, you know, in terms of their physique, in terms of the, you know, facial structure, things like that. And then the wardrobe department and hair and makeup has done a great job making everybody look like they're from the 80s. And then it fell on me to train them to fight like who they're actually playing, which is not Breland. A character. Again, it's a person. Mark Breland, you know, his style. He's got that lead hand down. He's on that back foot. You know, he's got that boom, that piston jab. He's saving up for that right hand. Luckily, the actor that is playing him is a former fighter himself. So he has some really good chops. His fight scenes are awesome. He really
Breland,
took...
Would you say Breland is probably the best amateur ever come out of the U.S.?
He's the best U.S. amateur. Yeah, that's pretty much the...
Ever.
That's pretty much, quote-unquote, what they say about Mark Breland. He is the best U.S. amateur of all time. So paying homage to him was really important for not only myself, but also the actor playing him. And Mark has called in. He spoke to the guys. You know,
was he on set recently? I saw something. Guzman posted something.
No, he was in the... fight? That was from a fight from over the weekend. That was on the Danny Garcia, Danny Gonzalez undercard. But yeah, so Evander has called and spoke to the actor playing Evander. Again, got lucky with the casting of the Evander character, because he's a good athlete, and he really wanted to make sure he looked the part. So it was funny when I had these guys for 2 months in the gym training them every day, 5 days a week, 7 hours a day with these guys. So, you know, first of all, is getting them in shape, right? Make sure they can look the part, be physical. They can also deal with the rigors of filming. Filming's 10, 11, 12 hour days. And if you have a fight scene, it's all day. You're in the ring from 9 a.m. until 7, 8 p.m. when we finish.
For what, like a 5 minute fight scene?
For 2 minute. And it's because it's so many different angles. It's got to be done perfectly. The choreography has to be completely set. No one gets hit. You can't get hit. So everything has to be choreographed perfectly. It's a lot.
You can't get hit?
No, dude, you can't. They're actors. You can't get punched in this head in this day and age. Maybe in the 70s, but you can't get hit. So you train them to be in shape, then you train them how to box, and then you train them to be that guy. So most of the training was spent treating the actors like the fighter and making sure that they look the part. Otherwise, it's just not going to play on screen.
That's nuts. And Jamie Foxx is in the movie. He's playing the coach, correct?
Yeah, he's playing Coach Rel. He's playing the coach, and he's been on set every single day. He's a character.
Really?
Yeah, he's a character. He's very, very funny.
Have you any run-ins with him?
Yeah, every day. I'm next to him all the time.
Wow. And he was supposed to portray Tyson, because that was like when I heard the rumors for this Jamie Foxx movie, I was like, oh, this must be finally the Tyson movie, because there's that one clip where he's talking about the opening scene. He does that amazing Tyson impression, and he also, like, they're going to CGI him and stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say, I mean, they must have already shot that, because he's in his late 50s, and I can't imagine
almost
him playing.
Had that stroke and everything, too.
Yeah. Is he going to play an older Mike Tyson? Who's going to play him younger?
Yeah, they're going to CGI the heck out of him, and he's still in good shape, though, right, Jamie?
I mean, yeah, but it's Mike Tyson. You can't, like, it's like pretty good shape for
there's
a 57-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic shape for a 57-year-old man. And Mike Tyson, you can't compare the two. So.
1995 Mike Tyson looked like he was sculpted from the gods.
Yeah, but the one that came out of prison was jacked.
He did a lot of sit-ups and push-ups in prison, Mike. So Chris has been on a movie set. Some know that now. If you're listening, we all know it. And they've been announcing it. I think Netflix put out a big thing.
Yeah.
I expect to be at the premiere. I'll get a tux. Do I get a plus one?
I'm not even going to be at the premiere, bro. Who are you?
Dude, if you're in the movie, you're going to be at the premiere.
Not necessarily.
Come on. And it's on Netflix?
It is
no
on Netflix.
No theaters?
I don't know. I don't know how that goes. I don't know when it's coming out.
If it's just a Netflix vehicle, this thing's going to be seen by so many people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a Netflix vehicle, so.
That's awesome.
I wonder if it's gonna be in theaters at all. That'd be pretty cool if it was, though.
I don't know how that works. I feel like the movie industry has completely changed. In terms of like being a consumer of movies, like do they put movies in theaters anymore? I haven't been to the movies in a long time. Is everything
going right to streaming? They have opening weekends, but I feel like it's only Marvel movies. Those are the only ones that make any money. So
Yeah, I heard that the Rock's movie, Smashing Machines, not doing well because...
I want to see it.
Right, and that got me thinking about... So obviously they're doing a movie on the 1984 Olympic team. We have... The Rock has a movie out about Mark Kerr. They're making a damn movie about the guy... They're making a movie about the making of Rocky. Have you seen this? It's called I Play yeah. Rocky. There is a guy playing Rocky.
Amazing.
That's how crazy the Rocky franchise has become. There's so many boxing movies. There's Bleed for This, Vinny Pazienza story. There's The Fighter. There's Raging Bull. There's Ali, of course, about Ali's The Hurricane, about Reuben Carter. So it got me thinking about the top five boxing movies that we want to see made about either a boxer or a boxing personality. And there's so many out there. And I will preface this. I was thinking about this on the train yesterday to the Knicks game. Every boxer's life is a movie. Your life, Chris, is a movie.
Yeah, 100%.
It's all humble beginnings and then reaching the top of the mountain. And that's a movie. Like, that's literally what a movie is. Humble beginnings, like every fighter.
And then the awful slide.
Well, yours hasn't begun yet. I hope that doesn't happen for you. You're still sitting pretty as a stunt coordinator and podcast host and media mogul. But yeah, usually it's a humble beginning, like Manny Pacquiao, you know, had to eat his dog or something? Like his dad... Or his dad ate his dog, or I don't know. Well, that's the beginning scene of the Manny Pacquiao movie. And then he starts off as nothing, leaves home, becomes a freaking 9 billion division champion, and now he's almost the president of the Philippines. That's a lot of these boxing stories. All of them start from nothing. Geronta Davis, weird segue, but Geronta Davis coming from nothing to something. It's always nothing to something. Whereas your case, you came from a good life on Long Island. Like, you didn't have to box. So that would be the Chris Algieri story, is you in college. I think I'm going to be – not college, but I'm going to be a boxer one day. So there's always these starts. I feel like you would play yourself. But now here it is, the top five boxing movies we want to see made. I'll start off with my list. Mm-hmm. Coming in at the top at number five, it's the Jake Paul story.
I saw that – I thought about it too, and I figured you'd bring that one up. But
only reason I'm bringing this up is because I will be in the movie. There will be a portion of the movie where I'm in it. Because
he said the only reason I'm bringing this up.
Only reason. Jake has talked about him. He says he's going to make a movie about his life. He said it's the craziest 5-year stretch. I'm making the Jake Paul story from Disney to whatever. I don't have a name. It's a working title. I'm in the movie. Mostly that's why I have this on the list at number five. I play myself as an MVP announcer at number five. Number four, I was torn between Charlie Z story, The Ultimate Troll. Final scene is him getting destroyed by Deontay Wilder wearing a backwards glove. You don't know this guy, but I'm about to bust out a name right now.
I do. Oh, okay.
Sorry. You know Charlie Z. You don't know Ringwalk John. Do you know Ringwalk John?
No.
Oh my God, bro. There are some listeners out here listening to this podcast right now that are like, oh my God, I can't believe you just said Ringwalk John. Where is that guy? 2020, this guy, Jonathan Lear, burst onto the boxing media scene literally out of nowhere. And he called himself Ringwalk John. He was like a gambling guy. And he won like 7 or 8 weeks in a row. He had his own boxing show. It was really good. I had him on my show. I went on his show. He started building up a lot of momentum. Like, I believe the Zone was like interested in giving him a gambling show because he was like that good gambling, and he was really good on the mic, and he was like a real charismatic guy. And I remember being like, yo, where the heck did this guy come from? And all boxing Twitter was like, who is this Ringwalk John guy? And like a couple weeks before the Zone was going to give him this show, all these tweets start coming out that the guy has a very checkered past. Like, long story short, he faked having cancer like 5 years before this and left his whole world behind. He like he went the whole nine, shaved his head and everything. And all this all this came out like as he got huge in the boxing world. I think like a past girlfriend or like a scorned friend or something who gave him money or something was like, yo, you John Ringwalk John isn't who you think he is. And then he just straight up disappeared off the face of the earth, this guy, John. I hadn't heard from him. He disabled all his social media. Gone. So the Ringwalk John movie, probably an independent movie. I don't think it'll get made. Maybe like a
sounds like the Tinder Swindler of boxing.
Maybe a Lifetime movie. I don't know if this gets the Netflix treatment, but I have that coming in at number four, the Ringwalk John story. Number three, one of the more traditional, like the Bob Arum story.
And yeah, then the guy, good one.
Fucking promoted Evel Knievel straight up to Manny Pacquiao and Mayweather, De La Hoya, the Four Kings. unbelievable life. Still alive, eating gummies, flying across the world.
Drinking tequilas, eating steaks.
Yeah. There's not many like highs and lows with the Arum story. It's mostly just highs, him being really high or just being making a lot of money. Maybe like a Haman story might be kind of cool.
In terms problem of, with those kind of stories is like you're not going to get the true story. You're not going to hear the juicy parts.
Right. It's like a lot
unless
of
you have, unless you have some insider who like really knows what the hell's going on and like wants to like do a tell all.
Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of these documentaries that are coming out these days. They're all made by the person that right. they're doing the documentary.
Completely one-sided, right?
Right. Haman might be interesting if you can get some real figure out. I know there's not dirt on Haman, but like just the real story on him. I guess the Turkey story is still being told. That's a kind of a crazy one. We don't know where it's going to end and how far that will go. I have that at number three, like a promoter type of movie. Probably Aram because he's had the craziest life. His
definitely
life
Aram,
a movie.
But also because they've done Don King so many times. And how are you going to do Don King and not do Bob?
Well, you can have King in it too. You could maybe.
Oh, he's like going to be in it, but they've done Don King movies. Like, how has there never been a Bob movie?
No. Because I don't think there's a lot there. Like, there is a lot there, but like, what's the plot? Like, oh, rich guy just keeps getting richer.
No, brilliant attorney figures out boxing, and writes the book on being on boxing promotion.
Okay, yes, I like it. Number two, the Four Kings movie, the real Four Kings.
Oh, like not the documentary, like an actual movie?
Actual movie. The documentary is phenomenal. It's on Showtime.
It is phenomenal. It's one of the best boxing documentaries out.
So freaking good.
Ever.
I want to run through a wall when I when that came out. But the actual movie on them would be cool as hell. Like Hagler, all four of them, you know, kind of different backgrounds. And the Duran chapters would be insane of him going back home. He had like a pet tiger blowing up and partying and all that. You know, Sugar Ray being the star. You got Tommy Hearns, who is the Motor City Cobra. I like that one a lot. I like that movie a lot. And then number one movie, you're going to love this one. It's called Born to Lose, the Reggie Strickland story.
Yeah. Yeah. The journeyman. Yeah.
276 losses for Reggie Strickland. He, the ultimate jobber, the ultimate journeyman, the ultimate just loser. The guy, but not only is he a loser, Chris, and he's a jobber, and he went years without wins. You go to his box, his record, it's just all red. 66 wins, 276 losses, fighting out of Indianapolis, Indiana. I was reading up on this guy. He was an absolute character, too, on top of it. Real Sports did a interview with him. Just driving around from city to city, fighting the hometown guy, losing, of course. But on top of that, I read this one little excerpt where he was in a small town and he noticed that there was a local fight that night, but they needed a female fighter. He found this woman like on the street, trained her for 5 minutes. Keep your hands up, blah, blah, blah. Got a finder's fee, got a fee to work her corner. She goes into the ring and she's about to get blasted out in there. He tells her to make believe you lost your contact fell out. So she goes, oh, my contact's out. They're looking on the mat. Everyone is in there looking for the contact that doesn't exist. And I think the fight just ends as a DQ. She doesn't get hurt. He gets his money, and he's off in his van to the next fight. The Reggie Strickland story. I don't know how it ends. I think he's still alive, but that's my fight.
Yeah, he's definitely still alive.
Yeah, I went to his – yeah, he's still alive. He's still with us. But
that's awesome.
He's retired. But those are my five.
All right, my five, and probably not surprising. I took mine a little more seriously than yours, but in no particular order. Number one, El Intocable, Nicolino Loque, the Argentinian WBA lightweight champion from, when was this? I guess he was in the 70s? Yeah, 60s and 70s. Arguably the best defensive fighter of all time. He was this Argentinian guy. And he went to Tokyo and won the title. Literally, the Japanese fighter quit on his stool because he was so frustrated because he couldn't hit him. But this guy would smoke in between rounds. He would drink. He would party. He did not take training seriously at all, but he was just so damn good. Like, he just like make you miss. Incredible, incredible story. Interesting, very, very interesting guy. Tons of swagger. And just the kind of a guy who's just like, I'm just so good. I don't have to do anything you guys have to do. I'm still world class. He would be a fun one. And just, I don't know, just the attitude of this guy would be something else. Arturo Gatti, I mean, what? Well, that's such a story. It's kind of open-ended. And I think you could take it a lot of different ways because there is so much unknown about, you know, how things ended. But even leading up to his untimely death, you know, he was a wild man, you know, from the parties, from winning to getting arrested to fighting with cops to, you know, God knows what else. I partied with him in AC one time. It was a scary night. You know, like,
you know, so, you call that one Thunderstruck.
The Arturo Gatti.
I was thinking of Gatti too, but like with his son and stuff, it's just such a sad ending. Like, how do we end that movie?
Well, yeah, it's, I mean,
movies, I wanted to end it with his son becoming a boxer.
Right, becoming a champion. That would be fantastic. But this is still
too tragic movie.
Still too wide open. Jack Johnson, I think, would be a fantastic movie. There's just so much history there. You know, the first black heavyweight champion of the world who did it during the Jim Crow era. Tons of things leading up, you know, against him, but also just a flamboyant personality in terms of the way that he carried himself and all the things that he did. He's a trailblazer. And yeah, I think that there's a lot of meat on that bone. Sonny Liston, similar.
Oh, man.
Similar, you know, kind of character. That's a movie. That's got to be the next one because, you know, from in terms of being such a dominant champion, but also the criminal side of his life and dying so young and the ways that that could have been done. I think that movie needs to be done. That needs a screenplay written. Dan, let's write that one
chapter.
Everything. This is, it's amazing to me. It hasn't been done yet. An incredible character.
In the Ali movie a little bit.
A little bit, but he needs his own. He needs his own.
Exactly.
And then lastly, this one's going to be the most controversial. The History of Peds in Boxing, a documentary style where we talk about some of the biggest infractions that have been that have occurred in the sport, how dangerous it is. Look at it from a scientific perspective, what certain peds do to the body and how damaging they can be and how dangerous they can be to use in a sport where you're punching people in their brains. I mean, you talk about certain guys who have historically been known. I think there's a lot of meat on that bone too, but that would be a tough one to get off the ground.
I was going to say that's a 30 part series. Number one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be great to have, not great, but it'd be powerful to have some fighters that could admit to using PEDs in their career.
Mm-hmm.
Older ones, and now what they're dealing with their bodies. I don't know if they would ever admit it. I don't know. Statute of limitations probably closed on that, right?
There is no statute of limitations when it comes to accomplishments, so guys would never come out with it. Because then you're gonna put asterisks on their accomplishments.
It's not like baseball where you're putting asterisk next to Barry Bonds, like
literal boxing. Asterisk, but it's it's opinion. I don't know.
Like that one. Not a movie, but like a documentary type movie.
Exactly,
like kind of we like were kings.
What was the one about the Peds, the Russians? That documentary that's on Netflix is incredible.
I know the one about Balco was really good about our guy.
Yeah, Conti. Nah, there was a really good one. Icarus is phenomenal. That's a fan. I might watch that today. Actually, that's a really good doc.
I'm talking about like how it's made. Like When We Were Kings was like half documentary, half film.
Mm-hmm.
Which I believe belongs in the discussion for best boxing movies ever. I know it's not really like a quote unquote movie, but if you don't watch, it was on Netflix for a while when we were kings. I think they took it off. Yours are way more serious. Mine are fucking stupid. Jake Paul movie, The Ringwalk.
I was gonna say Jake Paul, but I think there's so much more to the story because we got to see
how
far he goes.
There will be a movie on Jake Paul, and he probably will play himself. Yeah. Because take away all the hate. Take away the hate and take away everyone's feelings on it. It is an absolute crazy, ridiculous story.
No, it's a crazy, amazing story. But that's my point. I think he's going to do a lot more. Like, will he get a world championship? You know, he's going to be a promoter for a long time. I think there's a lot left for him to do before he could do that. And also, I don't think he should do it on himself. I think someone else should do it. And he should not play himself. I think that would take away from it. Because I think it's a great story.
Born to Lose, the Reggie Strickland story.
It's a good one too, but
the ultimate loser. Just lose, baby. Like Al Davis, just win, just lose. But this guy was crazy. I was reading the stories on him, just like smoking weed in his van in between fights, and just the ultimate red light district aspect of boxing. The real red light district.
Like, well, that's why I brought up Nicolino Loke, because he's kind of like Sean Strickland, the Reggie Strickland, but except he's a champion. He was actually really, really good.
That's crazy.
Smoking in between rounds. In between rounds for pro fight.
Mayorga?
worse than Mayorga. He did it in between rounds. And I heard some of Mayorga.
At least Mayorga had the respect to do it after the fight.
Yeah, this guy would literally stick his head out the ropes, and his corner had it lit up already, and he would feverishly take puffs off the cigarette before the bell rang.
That goes in the trailer of the movie.
That's awesome. Yeah.
All right, everyone. Hope you enjoyed our episode this week. Enjoy the fights. We have a good one in the heavyweight division, and we'll be back on Monday to recap it all and some more hijinks. We're getting closer and closer to real fights coming our way at the in November and December. Any final words, Chris, from Hollywood?
No, man, this is a fun episode, and these fights this weekend are going to be pretty dope. I guess we're going to talk about them this weekend too.
That's what we do. We reconvene and we talk about them as we do every single week. We appreciate you all for tuning in. Protect your hands at all times. Protect your everything at all times. And stay out of those DMs. Goodbye.